Last week, I believe we completed the text of chapter 3, and we still have a number of things to discuss with regard to chapter 3. Chapter 3 is the story of the act of sanctification of God's name, Kiddush Hashem, of Hananiah, Mishael, Va'azariah. Hananiah, Mishael, Va'azariah are called upon to bow down before the statue of Nebuchadnezzar, and they refuse. They're thrown into the furnace. They emerged unharmed, unscathed, unsinged. And Nebuchadnezzar makes his great statement near the end of the chapter. Psukim 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. The story of Hananiah, Mishael, Va'azariah ends in Pasuk 30 in chapter 3. Beidayin Malkar Hatzlach L'Shadrach Meshach Va'aved Nego B'Bindinat Bavel. Then the king gave great success to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Medinat Bavel. We did have, last week I gave you the sheet of Medrash Shir Hashirim. We went through most of Medrash Shir Hashirim. And I want to give you this morning a slightly different approach. If you'll take a look again at the beginning of the Medrash Shir Hashirim, just the first few lines, it said, Al Dat Rabbanan, according to our rabbis, Avdu Yisrael Avodah Zarah, Bimei Nebuchadnezzar. According to our rabbis, Jews worshipped idolatry in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. Al Dat Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai, Lo Avdu Yisrael Avodah Zarah, Bimei Nebuchadnezzar. According to Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai, Jews did not worship idols in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. Now you hear what the difference of opinion is. According to the rabbis, they did worship idols. According to Rav Shimon ben Yochai, they did not worship idols. And wherein lies the difference between the two? Says the Medrash, Al Dat Rabbanan, the opinion of the rabbis is that of the Yisrael Avodah Zarah, Ketzad, how was it that Jews, what was it that happened? Nebuchadnezzar Hemet Selim, Nebuchadnezzar erected a statue for Hifrish Esrum Mishlosha Mikol Uma Vuma, for Esrum Mishlosha Mikol Yisrael. According to the rabbis, Nebuchadnezzar set aside 23 people from each nation who would bow down before the statue. Of the 23, 20 did bow down, and only 3 did not bow down. According to Rav Shimon ben Yochai, according to Rav Shimon ben Yochai, he appointed 3. The 3 were Hananiah, Mishael, Va'azariah, to represent the Jewish people, and they did not bow down. Now, that such is the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Yochai is not terribly simple. Because the sheet that I've given you this morning begins with a Gemara in Megillah. I want to read this Gemara in Megillah with you. The Gemara in Megillah says the following. Sha'alu Tamidov et Reb Shimon ben Yochai. This is an absolutely fascinating piece of Gemara, and I have my own pshat over here that I want to share with you. Sha'alu Tamidov et Reb Shimon ben Yochai. The students of Reb Shimon ben Yochai asked their Rebbe, Mipnei ma nitchaivu son'ehem shel Yisrael shepa'oto hador. Now you have to understand that the Gemara is using a euphemism. When the Gemara talks about Son Ehen Shel Yisrael, the enemies of Israel, it means Israel. They don't want to, in certain circumstances when they don't want to use the name Israel, for example over here the question really is, the students of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai asked their great Rebbe, why were Jews under threat of total destruction in the days of Mordechai and Esther? Mipnei ma nitchaivu son ehem shel Yisrael shevaoto hador. Why were the enemies of Israel, euphemism, quotation marks, why were they under threat in that generation of kloya, destruction? Quite an interesting question. Now, you're going to have to get a little bit of the history over here.
You say that when they talk about the Israel,
yes. they didn't want to say out of their mouths, why were Jews under threat of total destruction? They didn't want to say a sentence like that, and you have it time and time again. This appears in Shas and in Medrash often. Instead of using saying a sentence in which you talk about something terrible about the Jewish people, you use a euphemism, and the euphemism usually is Sonei Em Shel Yisrael. Remember, otherwise there's no way to understand this Gemara. This is a Gemara in Megillah. Do you know any time when anti-Semites were under threat of total destruction? This is the means by which, you know, I'll tell you what it's like. Got a great example. When we say Lo Yaleinu. By the way, Lo Yaleinu means Of Yene Sayni Yisrael Akatuv Adem. Lo Yaleinu, not on us. So over here, the way they ask the question of these other students of Rav Shimon ben Yochai. I don't have to tell you who Rav Shimon ben Yochai is. Anybody living in Eretz Yisrael knows who Rav Shimon ben Yochai is. Anybody knows who Lag Baomer knows who Rav Shimon ben Yochai is. Rav Shimon ben Yochai was the giant of Torah Shebaal Peh. So the students asked their Rebbe. Now, you need a little history over here. First of all, the history is this question is being asked, I would estimate, about 400 years after the story of Purim, at least 400 years later, the students asked the question, Rebbe, pray tell us, why was there a threat of total destruction upon the Jewish people? Fascinating response, Amar Lahem. So Rav Shimon ben Yochai said to his students, Imru Atem, you tell me. Obviously he assumes that a question of this sort, they have given thought to it. So, what do you think? Why do you think Jews were under threat of total destruction in the days of Mordechai and Esther? Amru lo, so they said, Mipnei shenenu misutato shel oto rasha. Because Jews enjoyed the party of that rasha, Achashverosh. Jews went, and there are different opinions. According to some, there was indeed trefa food over there. And according to others, it was Badatz Glot. But Jews went to the party. And from the Gemara, it seems because they enjoyed the party of that Rasha. Gemara doesn't seem to be saying because they ate treif. It's because they enjoyed the party of that Rasha. So Rav Shimon ben Yochai responds to his students and says, well, there's something not fair about this. Im kein, shebishu sham yaharogu. So then the threat of destruction should be against the Jews of Shushan. But Jews throughout the whole world, they're innocent. They're not guilty of anything. Now the fact is that what Rav Shimon ben Yochai is saying to his students is a very good question. How did it for a moment even occur to them to say that there should be a threat of total destruction on all men, women and children throughout 127 states? Why? Because some Jews in Shushan, some hotshot Jews over there, went ahead and enjoyed the party of Ahasuerus. On Rulosa, they said to their Rebbe, okay, we tried, now, and Morato, you tell us why. Amalehem, so he said to them, Mipnei sheishtachavu latzelem, because they bowed down to the statue. They bowed down to the statue. What statue is he talking about? This statue. Now, what happens immediately, of course, is the following. It means, therefore, the Rav Shimon ben Yochai in the Gemara is saying something different than the Rav Shimon ben Yochai in the Medrash. Rav Shimon ben Yochai in the Medrash said, Al dat Rav Shimon ben Yochai lo avdu Yisrael avodah zarah. Shimon ben Yochai said that Jews didn't worship idols in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. Here in the Gemara, Rav Shimon ben Yochai says the threat of total destruction is because Jews bowed down to the statue. Amru lo, so the student said to him, V'chi maso panim yesh badavar? Maso panim means, does God show favoritism? if they bow down to the statue, then they should indeed be destroyed. They're idol worshippers. Amar lahem, so Rav Shimon Yochai said to his students, Hein lo osu elo lefanim, they only did it for appearance sake, not because they accepted the idol upon themselves as any kind of a deity. So you know what the Rav Shimon did? The threat was only a threat. All that he did was, he did to them what they did to him. They did something that was not, it wasn't real. So God's threat against the Jewish people in the days of Haman was also not real. Right. Now, first you need a little history. Nebuchadnezzar is the first king of Babel. He's going to be followed by Avil Merodach and Belshazzar. There's going to be a whole chapter about Belshazzar. I think it's chapter 5. Belshazzar is going to be the son or grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, according to different opinions. And he's the one who's going to see the handwriting on the wall. And the handwriting on the wall is going to mean the end of the Babylonian Empire. That night, the Babylonian Empire comes to an end. It comes crumbling down, and Persia and Medes are the ones that now rise to power. Now, there's going to be Daryavesh, king of Persia, Koresh, and then Ahasuerus. We're talking, therefore, from the time that they bow down to the statue until the story of Purim is 45 years at least. So now the question that had been raised in the Gemara was the question of why. The students asked, why was there a threat of total destruction upon the Jews in the days of Mordechai and Esther? The students are the ones who say because Jews at the time enjoyed the party of Ahasuerus. Rav Shimon ben Yochai says no. It dates back 45 or 50 years earlier when Jews bowed down to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. Alright? So now Rav Shimon ben Yochai in the Gemara holds that Jews did bow down to the statue. However, they did not mean it as idolatry was not a form of worship. Alright, now, how are we going to understand the machloket over here between the students of Rav Shimon ben Yochai and Rav Shimon ben Yochai? How indeed did it occur to them that all of world Jewry should be under threat of total destruction because some Jews went ahead and ate from the party of Ahasuerus? So Jews in Eretz Yisrael and in Greece and in America and in England, they're guilty because some Jews went to the party of Ahasuerus. On the other hand, Rav Shimon ben Yochai says because they bowed down to the statue. That was 45 years earlier. What relationship does that have to what happens 45 years later, 50 years later? Why did the Revelation wait 50 years? How are we to relate the two events? What also, by the way, is very fascinating about this Gemara is the fact that the question is being discussed 400 years after the event, which means that it seems that Rav Shimon ben Yochai and his students, or maybe for that matter Klal Yisrael, had difficulty coming to grips with a near Holocaust until a few hundred years later. In other words, they did not feel that in the immediate aftermath of the near Holocaust they would be able to come to grips with the philosophy, the theology, the psychology of it. You know, sometimes one needs the much longer view of history. Not always can we succeed in coming up with the answers immediately. Sometimes you need time in order to come to grips with it. But all right, we're living in a day and age that maybe the Holocaust is something that forced itself upon us, that we had to try to come to grips with it, and I don't know if we have. All right. So I once said the following, and I want to share that with you, and I think that it will explain this Gemara. But it's quite clear that there are different opinions. What the Gemara over here expresses is a different opinion with regard to the statue. The question is, was the statue idolatry? Was the statue a statue of Nebuchadnezzar or something that represented him? And it was a pledge of allegiance to the kingdom of Babel? This is open to question. It's a question that's the Rishonim and the Achronim and even different opinions in the Medrash. Remember, the Medrash said that according to the rabbis, Jews did worship idols. That means the rabbis hold it was idol worship. According to Rav Shimon ben Yochai, it might be otherwise, and according to the Rabbi Tam, and Taisus says that it was on Dartish Shamalachim, it was a statue of the king. Rav Shimon ben Yochai may very well also hold the same thing, that it was not idolatry, it was a statue, and they bowed down to the statue. So what's the problem? So for this, there should be a threat of total destruction upon the Jewish people. So I said that once said, in order to understand this Gemara, what we have to do is take a look at a block of Jewish history. We have to take a look at the following. All of the events of Purim are taking place at the end of the 70 years of the Babylonian exile. To be precise, it's about year 69 from the time of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. There are already Jews who have returned to Eretz Yisrael. Zerubbabel and Yehoshua Kohen Gadol are already back in Eretz Yisrael, but the Yishuv here in Eretz Yisrael is a very weak and a meager one. Koresh, king of Persia, had already given permission. Mi bachem b'kol amo, who is there amongst his entire people? Vashem imo v'yal, God should be with him and he can go up. Those are the last words in Tanakh, the end of Divrei Hayamim. Koresh's great declaration. Anybody who wants to go on Aliyah, you can go on Aliyah. Some things never change. Yes, so, some people went on Aliyah. The bulk of Jews remained in Chutz Laaretz. There will be another Aliyah that's going to come some years later when Ezra is going to go up with a group of Jews. But right now we're talking at the end of the 70 years, it's nearly 70 years, and according to Achashverosh's calculation, it is 70 years already. We're going to see that problem in chapter 5 as well. Everybody was concerned about calculating when is the end of the 70 years. Yirmiyahu had spoken about 70 years. Belshazzar, grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, when he calculated that the 70 years were up, he took out the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash and they drank from them. This was his declaration of independence from the prophecies of Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu was wrong. They were frightened because Yirmiyahu had said that Babel was going to fall. And they were frightened of Yirmiyahu's prophecy. And then, they see that the 70 years that he said, Babel has 70 years to go, and the 70 years are up, all over. So they take out the kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, and of course, poor Belshazzar is destroyed that night, and Persia takes over. In the Megillah, when it says, in the third year of the reign of Ahasuerus, he made a party, so the Gemara explains, you know why he made a party? Because according to his calculation, the 70 years were up. And Jews had not been redeemed. He made his calculation, and the Gemara explains, his calculation was also wrong. Everybody started the 70 years at a different time, from the first year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, from the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, from the first exile of Jews, from the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Nobody knew when you begin. If you don't know when you begin the 70 years, you don't know when you end the 70 years. By the way, we're learning Daniel. Daniel has the same problem. If you will just take a look at chapter 9 in Daniel. Just turn to chapter 9 over here. This is easier already because in the second half of Daniel we're into the Hebrew part of Daniel. You're going to miss the Aramaic when we get to it. You're going to miss it. Oh, come on. You're going to be the first one in your neighborhood to know Karibon and B'rich Shemei and Yakum Park, and you're going to be thrilled. Watch. Bishnat, in chapter 9 of Daniel, Bishnat Achat l'Daryovash ben Achashverosh mizer Amodai, in the first year of Daryovash, the son of Achashverosh, from the seed of Modai, Asher Hamlach al Malchut Kazdim, who had become king over the kingdom of the Kazdim are the Babylonians. The Babylonians have disappeared before the onslaught of the Medians. Bishnat Achab Lemolcho in the first year of his reign, of Daryanish's reign, Ani Daniel, I Daniel, Binoti Basparin, I studied, I wanted to understand the books, Misparashonim Asher Hoyod Barashem El Yirmiyahu Hanavi. What was the number of years that the word of God had been to the prophet Yirmiyahu, Lemalot L'Chorbot Yerushalayim, Shivim Shona, that 70 years will be completed from the destruction of Yerushalayim? He doesn't know. He doesn't know. And he has all sorts of... later on it's going to say that he prays and he prostrates himself before God. That's not important. All that's important right now is nobody knows when the 70 years begin. Nobody knows when the 70 years end. The Rambam in one of his great letters says, take a look, the same thing repeated itself twice. Our God made a covenant with Avram, the B'rit Bein Havatarim, that your children are going to be enslaved, strangers in a land that's not theirs, and going to be enslaved for 400 years. And they didn't really know when did the 400 years begin and when did the 400 years end. And the fact is, even until today, we don't know. Because they were only in Mitzrayim for 210 years. All right, so there's one opinion in the Medrash that says that the 400 years began with the birth of Yitzchak. From the birth of Yitzchak until the Exodus, 400 years. There is another opinion in the Medrash. Many Midrashim say that no, it started when they came down to Mitzrayim. They were only there for 210 years. Because God saw that if he was not going to redeem his people then, they would be submerged and lost within the dominant civilization. And therefore he had to pluck them out. And on the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Midaleg al Heharin Mikapetz al Hakvaot, God jumps over the hills and the mountains. The Medrash says that he jumps beyond the time that is set, because if he's not going to take them out now, who knows what's going to happen. Which means even until today, we don't know. We don't know, did they have, were they in Mitzrayim and completed the 400 years of exile or not? The difference, of course, is, Medrash says that if they haven't completed the exile, then they will complete it at some other time. And therefore the Medrash says, his bi'ani bamirorim hirvani lano. His bi'ani bamirorim is the pasuk in Eicha that says, his bi'ani bamirorim, I was sated with maror, hirvani lano, you gave me to drink the bitter drink of lana. Which means the following. Then, first of all, from the calendar. Do you know how the calendar, Jewish calendar, works? There's one of the simanim of the Jewish calendar is At, Bash, Gar, Da. I'll tell you what it means. Not all of them. At, the first day of Pesach, is always the same day as Tisha B'Av. The night of Pesach, if the night of Pesach comes out on Mitzvah Shabbos, then you should know Tisha B'Av that year. You don't have to look in your calendar. Tisha B'Av is going to be Mitzvah Shabbos and Sunday. So that's one shot in the Medrash. His Biani Bamerorim, the night that you gave me Maror, is also the night of Hirvani Lano, the night that you gave me the bitter drink. But there's another pshat according to the Medrash, the Beis Halevi, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik the first, says that if Jews did not complete the exile in Egypt but were removed before the time, that means they still owe time. So therefore his bani bamerorim, because of the morah on the night of Pesach which came early, it guaranteed that there was going to have to be another, we're going to have to pay it up, and there's going to be a Tisha B'Av that is going to bring us mourning as well. Is bi'ani bamerorim hirvani lana. Which means I started to say the Rambam, you know, kegivusav of this gezuk, you know, my age we have to remember what it was that we were talking about, and I'm thrilled. The Rambam says that if with regard to the 400 years of Mitzrayim we're not certain when it began and when it ended, with regard to the 70 years of the Babylonian exile, even Daniel and others were not sure when it began and when it ended, how can we ever be certain when the end comes to this longest exile of all? So that he was very much opposed, the Rambam was very much opposed, and so he paskins in the Yad HaChazaka You don't have a right. You don't have a right to attempt to calculate the end of days. Of course, we're going to save that Rambam till the end of Daniel. We once discussed it, not in a shir on Daniel, but Daniel is going to tell us when the end of time, or when the messianic era, or geula, whatever you want to call it, the end of the galus, ikus of the Mashiach, the footsteps of the Mashiach can be heard. He says he gives a date for it at the end of Sefer Daniel. Nobody really understands what it is. According to the Gemara, you're not permitted to calculate it. The Malbin is going to calculate it, and we'll talk about that when we get to the end of Daniel. All right. So what happens over here is the following. Here we have some 400 or 500 years after the Purim story, the theological discussion that takes place between Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and his students. The students want to know why. The students want to know why was there a threat. And we have the difference of opinion between Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and his students. They say it's because Jews enjoy the party of Achashverosh. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says because Jews bowed down to the statue in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. So what I'm saying is the following. In order to understand the machloket between Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and his students, what we have to do is take a look at that period, that block of 70 years. And what we have to take a look at is, number one, what did Jews look like at the beginning of the 70 years? And what did Jews look like at the end of the 70 years? In order to know what Jews looked like at the beginning of the 70 years, we have the most unusual, powerful portrayal of all. You want a perfect verbal portrait of what Jews looked like? You have it on your sheet. Al-Naharos Bavel. Al-Naharos Bavel, David HaMelech in Tehillim is describing Al-Naharos Bavel by the rivers of Babylon. Shom Yashavnu, there we sat. Gam Bochinu, when we cried. V'Zachreinu et Zion, when we remember Zion. We're talking about Jews who have been taken in chains and they're on their way to Bavel and they stop for a little while to rest by the rivers of Babylon. Al-Arovim B'Tocha, on the willow trees, Tolinu Kinoroteinu, we hung our harps. Why did we hang our harps over there? Kishom She'ilunu Shoveinu, because there our captors asked us, Divrei Shir, Jew, sing for us. V'Tolalenu, and those who taunted us said, Jews, we want Simcha out of you. Happy, dance, Jews. Shirulanu Mishir Tzion. Sing to us the songs of Zion. Haven't anti-Semites done that throughout all of time? What the terrible pictures of Nazis, Germans, Yimak Shimon making Jews dance. Dance, sing, Tolalein Simcha. What was the response that came from the Jews who were by the rivers of Babylon? How can we sing the song of God on foreign territory? This is strange, strange soil. We can't sing the songs of Zion here. And then, of course, they take the great oath that rings down the centuries. Imesh Bochech, Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini, Tirpak L'sham Yilichiki, Im Lo Eskereichi, Im Lo Alek Yerushalayim Arosh Simchati, if I forget you, Yerushalayim, let my right hand forget its cunning. Tidbak lishoni lechiki, let my tongue stick to the palate of my mouth. Im lo eskereichi, if I will not remember you. Im lo alek Yerushalayim arosh simchati, if I will not raise Yerushalayim above the top of greatest moment of joy. And this is in fact what we do. Imesh b'yachasene, imesh b'chech Yerushalayim tishkach yimini. And then is the tefillah of Klal Yisrael, Zechor Hashem Levnei Edom at Yom Yerushalayim. Rebbein Shem, remember to the children of Edom the day of Yerushalayim. Ha'omrim aru aru atay yisopah. The fact is that the Beit HaMikdash, first Beit HaMikdash, was not destroyed by Edom, it was destroyed by Bavel. But there was Edom on the side, egging Nebuchadnezzar on. Aru, aru, destroy, destroy, atay yisopah, until the very foundation. Bad Bavel, Hashadud of Bad Bavel, you know what's going to happen to you at the end? The end is you're going to be the one that's going to be shattered and destroyed. Ashrei, Sheyishalem Lochet Gimulech, shegamalt lanu. A fortunate and happy is going to be the person who's going to repay you what you did to us. Ashrei sheyogchez v'nipetz et olalayach el hasela. Fortunate and happy is going to be the one who's going to take your children and do to them what you did to our children, shatter them upon the rocks. What do we get from Maharod Bavel? We have over here, as I say, a powerful verbal portrayal of what Jews look like as they make their way out into exile. We're talking about a people who refuse under any circumstances whatsoever to come to terms with the exile, make peace with the exile. The exile is unnatural, and we will never, never make peace with it. Now, let's take the thread of history 70 years later. 70 years later, I'm certain, I don't like to say bad things about Jews, but I'm certain that any Jew who received an invitation to the party of Ahasuerus must have been thrilled. Not only that, there must have been people who, people who tried to finagle through their protectia to get invited to the party. So the students of Ahasuerus, the students of Rav Shimon Yochai say, take a look, 70 years later, look at what's happened. Can we describe the Jews of Shushan as Jews who have refused to make peace with the exile? No, they see themselves as part and parcel of Persian society. And if Ahasuerus is making a party, they're going to be participants in that party. They're going to be parties to that party. Not parties of the second part, but parties of the first part. All right, that's enough. What's even more troubling is these Jews are going to the party and they've lost sight why he makes the party. According to the Gemara, as we explained earlier, do you know why he makes the party? He makes the party because according to his calculation, Yirmiyahu was wrong, the 70 years are up, and Jews haven't been redeemed. And Jews join him in that celebration. So the students of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai are saying, this is an indication that we are no longer looking at a people who can be described as Al-Naharos Babel people. We're not looking at a people who have remained faithful to the oath of In Eshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini, and therefore there is a threat of total destruction upon them. So what they're saying is, it's not because a specific sin of the Jews of Shushan. They're saying that the way the Jews of Shushan are acting, that already paints for us a picture of 70 years later. You can be sure if that's what's going on in Shushan, that's how Jews feel all over. So comes Rav Shimon ben Yochai and he says, students, Taira Minor, do you know what we have to, you know what we really have to search for? We have to search for what was the crucial, what was the tragic moment at which it changed. When did Jews of Al-Naharos Babel, when did they make the fatal compromise that was ultimately going to lead to all of this? Where's the root? Where's the cause? So Rav Shimon ben Yochai says it goes back 45 years earlier. 45 years earlier, Rav Shimon ben Yochai is saying, I could have guaranteed you that Jews are going to be enjoying the party of Ahasuerus. Because when Jews are faced with the question of bowing down to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar, so forgive my, I mean the way I see it, I do have a fertile imagination. There are no question about it that this called for all of the major Jewish organizations in Babel, no question about it, that they all got together to decide what to do. The United Babel Appeal, the the conference of presidents of major Babylonian Jewish organizations. You had the Babylonian Jewish Congress and all of them get together, and the question, of course, they have to have conventions and plenary sessions and emergency meetings and position papers that are presented, and maybe 38 routes through Bavel to find their way before they go winging back elsewhere, and all of these great things are happening. And the question that's placed on the table before the Jews of Bavel: are we going to bow down to the statue or not? So, of course, you have a few right-wing extremists who say, over our dead bodies. They're upset over our dead bodies. We are on the Har HaZbabel Jews. We are not going to bend, bow, nor scrape before any kind of statue. No, it will not be. And then, of course, there are the cooler, the calmer, more moderate voices in the Jewish community that say, listen, you know, there's a reality, and we're living over here, and we have to be good citizens over here. And of course, everybody is able to quote psuk. I'll open it up. Everybody, of course, is going to quote psukim. Yirmiyahu said in chapter 29 in Yirmiyahu, "V'dirshu et shlom ha'ir, seek the peace of the city to which you're going to be exiled to." Yirmiyahu tells them, "Bnu batim, build houses, have families." He's telling them, you better settle in over there, because there were false prophets in the days of Yirmiyahu who said that the Jews that had been exiled, the first wave of exiles, the exiles of the days of Yehoyachon and Yehoyakim, the first wave of exiles, they're going to be brought back. Yirmiyahu says, no. Build houses, have families, seek the peace of the city. So I'm sure that the calmer minds must have said that, listen, if this is the price that we have to pay, well, you know, if you really want to get emotional about it, what do you think Jeremiah would have really wanted us to do? Don't you think he would have wanted us to make peace with the situation in which we found ourselves? But then there are three Meshugayim: Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These are the three. Ultimately, of course, what it means is that in terms of the wider Jewish community, it is the moderates that win the day. But Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah are not going to bow down. They're ready to go to their deaths. Says Rav Shimon ben Yochai to his students, the moment the Jewish community decided that they were going to bow down to the statue, at that moment they made the crucial compromise. In that compromise, they wiped out the Al-Naharos Bavel Jew, and now comes the new Golos Jew in his place. And therefore, Shimon ben Yochai says, from that moment, from that compromise, that fatal error, from that moment on and further, it's clear that 45, 50 years later, they're going to be enjoying the party of Ahasuerus. I remember hearing many years ago, I think I can even say it's about 35, 40 years ago, I remember hearing Rav Schneier Kotler, saying in the name of his father, Rav Aaron Kotler. And he said they spoke very quickly. I had to pick up exactly what was said. But I remember he said in the name of his father that in Yiddish, the Yeshua fin Abdor kenor kumen dur devos at nisht eivig gewendem chet hador. The salvation of a generation can only come through one who has not committed the sin of the generation, and that was Mordechai in Shushan Habira. Because what is it that Mordechai does? And this is really one of the reasons why I want to get to it. According to the Mefarshim, when everybody is bending and bowing before Haman, Mordechai lo yichre v'lo yishtakaveh, why doesn't he bow down? Because he takes his cue from Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The strength that Mordechai had not to bow down was because Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah didn't bow down. So therefore, while everybody is bowing down for Haman, he will not bow down before Haman. And the fact is, it says it a second time. In the Megillah, it says a second time, after there is already a decree to destroy all Jews, men, women, and children on the same day. And Haman comes out after the first party with Esther. This is already long after the decree. He's sitting there, Haman comes out, and now we know that this is Hitler. Who wants to destroy them? And it says, Mordechai lo kam velo zomi menu. Mordechai doesn't get up, he doesn't even move. It makes no difference than that this fellow is coming, walking by. Gemara even says that there were Jews who said, you know, who brought upon us this whole terrible destruction? You know, the Gedalei Ador, Mordechai. Mordechai, you don't want to bow down before Ahasuerus, so go hide yourself in your Galil, in your Bismarck, and don't give us a hard time over it. And Mordechai refuses to bow down. Where does he get this strength from? From Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Which means, therefore, the following. So I once said, and I like this. When Mordechai is introduced in the Megillah, it says the following: Ish Yehudi, Hoya B'Shushan Habira. There was a Jew in Shushan Habira whose name was Mordechai Ben Shimi, the son of Shimi, Ben Kish, Ish Yemini. And the Gemara says, Ish Yemini means that he was from the tribe of Binyamin. So the Gemara asks, wait a minute, the beginning of the Pasuk said that he was Ish Yehudi, which means he's from the tribe of Yehuda. The end of the Pasuk says he's Ish Yemini, which means he's from the tribe of Binyamin. Which tribe is he from? So the Gemara gives all sorts of answers. His mother was from Yehuda, his father was from Binyamin, or Fakert. Mark gives all sorts of answers. My answer to this is that there was still one Jew who walked through the streets of Shushan Habira who remained Ish Yemini. One Jew who remained faithful to the oath, Im Eshgachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini. There was one Jew that was not changed in the slightest by 70 years of Golos Bavel. If you wanted to take a look at what did a Jew of a previous generation look like, you had Mordechai walking through the streets of Shushan. Which means the following. The Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of one generation, their representative in the next generation, 45, 50 years later, and the truth is that they lived at the same time. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and Daniel were part of the first wave of exiles in the days of Jehoiachin. What does it say about Mordechai? Ish Yehudi, Hoya B'Shushan Aviro, Shmar Mordechai, Ben Yom, Ben Kish, Yishimini, Asher Hegla, Im Hagola, Asher Haglasa, Im Yechonya, Melech Yehuda, Asher Hegla, Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel. They were taken into exile. There were a number of waves of exiles that Nebuchadnezzar took. The first wave was Jehoiachin. Who came? Jehoiachin, king of Judah. Who came in that first wave? You have Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and Mordechai. Which means that most probably we'd have to ask the question, Mordechai heichon haya? Mordechai also must not have been in Babel at the time that there was the decree to bow down to the statue, just as we pointed out last week. According to many opinions, Daniel was out of the country. He was in Chutz Laaretz. Alright? So Daniel wasn't there, and that's why there's no mention of Daniel in chapter 3. Mordechai also was not, and there are differences of opinion, but one of the Olim in the days of Ezra, or maybe even in the first Aliyah, in the days of Zerubbabel, one of them is Mordechai. One of them is Mordechai. Difference of opinion. Is this the same Mordechai? I believe that it is the same Mordechai. And after Mordechai reaches the pinnacle of power at the end of the Megillah, he goes on Aliyah. There's a machloket in the Gemara. What happened to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah after the end of this chapter? So there's a Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan always says about anybody that we don't know who he is or where he is, Rabbi Yochanan always says that he went on Aliyah. That's one way, an easy way to disappear. Maybe one of these days I'll give you all of these Gemaras, about 3-4 different Gemaras in Sanhedrin. Even with regard to Daniel, where he was, so there's a machloket between Rav, Shmuel, and Rabbi Yochanan. Rav and Shmuel, who lived in Bavel, he was out of the country, he was here, he was there, he was on a mission. Rabbi Yochanan, who lived in Eretz Yisrael, he always takes the position, if you want to know where somebody is, they're in Eretz Yisrael. Mordechai went on Aliyah, Hanani Mishael Azariah went on Aliyah. The important thing is that we still remain, of course, our differences of opinion, and you know that's life. There are differences of opinion. Was the statue idolatry, or was the statue a pledge of allegiance to Malchus, the kingdom of Babel? In this Gemara over here, Rav Shimon ben Yochai says that Jews did bow down to the statue. In the Medrash that we learned last week, Rav Shimon ben Yochai says no, they didn't bow down, because according to Rav Shimon ben Yochai, there were three representatives of each nation, and the three from Klal Yisrael, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. So will the real Rav Shimon ben Yochai stand up? Who is it? Did they bow down or didn't they bow down? So I saw the Rebbe Akiva Eiger. Rebbe Akiva Eiger says there were two periods in Rav Shimon ben Yochai's life. The famous Gemara that says Rav Shimon ben Yochai, he was persecuted by Rome and he had to flee. Gemara in Shabbos says, so he and his son fled to a cave up in Miron, and it seems that there was a stream of water out there and a boxa tree, and they lived for 12 years. They lived on that, and they hid from the Romans. And at the end of 12 years, they came out and they studied Torah. I thought, what do you think they did? They studied Torah. They came out. So the Gemara says, wherever Rav Shimon ben Yochai would look, he saw people plowing and planting and working in the fields. They were consumed by the fire of his eyes. Of haporeach, a bird that would fly over Rav Shimon ben Yochai's head was consumed by the sanctity of Rav Shimon ben Yochai. A voice came out from heaven and said, Lachruve Artsy, you came out to destroy my land? Back into the cave! And they went back into the cave, and they came out a year later. And when they came out a year later, Rav Shimon ben Yochai was able to look with kindness and compassion upon the Jew who was plowing and planting and harvesting. So there are a number of unfortunate that say that in these two stages of his life, in the stage where he was the great fiery, literally fiery kanoi, Jews bowed down to the statue and therefore were under threat of destruction. When he came out of the cave a year later, and he had mellowed, and he had learned a tremendous lesson from the Rebbeinu Shalom, back into your cave, you want to destroy my people, back into your cave. He came out with a completely different approach, a sense of compassion that, you know, there are people out there who have to earn a living, and they have to work, and they have to work the land, and therefore it was then that Rav Shimon Yochai said, no, Jews didn't bow down. And there were only three who were called upon to bow down, and they were Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah.
Why was he angry that they were plowing and planting?
Because 12 years of he and his son alone studying Torah, he had become angel-like. And therefore he saw, as the Gemara says, there is a machloket in Masechet Brachot between Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael says, if Jews are not going to plant at the time of planting and harvest at the time of harvest, how will they live? Rav Shimon ben Yochai said, if Jews are going to harvest and going to plant Torah matehei oleha, what's going to be with Torah? So Rav Shimon ben Yochai, when he was in the state of near angel-like sanctity, didn't understand. What are you talking about? This same period of time, he could be studying Torah, and he saw things in another light, because Yeshayahu says that there will come a time that others are going to plant and plow for you, and Jews will be free to study Torah. But then when he went back into the cave, when God sends him back into the cave for a year, he comes out afterwards with a more mature and more compassionate view of Klal Yisrael. Very simple. Very simple. Everything Yirmiyahu said came true. There's nothing as powerful as success. For 40 years, Yirmiyahu was walking the streets of Yerushalayim, and he says that Yerushalayim is going to be destroyed. Not only that, he says that Babel is going to destroy Yerushalayim. And it comes true. Is that not enough to shake up a whole world? Not only that. The last few chapters of Yirmiyahu says exactly what's going to happen to all the nations of the world all around. All of those who were passively or actively involved in Churban HaBayit. You can read it. Everything happened. That's why they're frightened of him. Yirmiyahu is a proven quantity. That's why everybody is concerned about him. Because the man spoke the truth. Let us put it maybe in a more painful way. While Yirmiyahu certainly did not see himself as a success in his lifetime, because his only success would have been if all of his prophecies would have been proven wrong. If Jews would have done tshuva and the Beis HaMikdash would not have been destroyed, that would have been his greatest success. Unfortunately, his success came, in a sense, posthumously. After he died, everybody saw that whatever Yirmiyahu had said came true. They trembled and they quaked before the words of Yirmiyahu, because he was a proven quantity. I remember there was a time, it must have been about 20 years ago, when there were all these cheap novels coming out about the Mossad, you know, when people still thought that the Mossad was the best, Nebuchadnezzar, it's not like that anymore. They're getting caught all over the place, I understand. They get into zones wherever they go. But there were all these Mossad novels. So one of them was about a plane that goes down in Iraq, and I don't know, I think the Mossad has to send in people to get them out. I don't remember the story. But there are 20 chapters in the book. And all of this is taking place not far from the ruins of ancient Babel. And every chapter in this pulp, cheap novel begins with another pasuk or two describing the destruction of Babel. It's worthwhile taking a look. The book, I don't remember. Look, Yirmiyahu. All I'm telling you is that the book brings Pesukim from Yirmiyahu. You know when we learned those chapters? Yvonne must remember. We learned those chapters in the months before the Gulf War. I learned those chapters. The 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, and 52 of Yirmiyahu. And 50, 51, and 52, he describes the destruction of Babel. You read those chapters, it's unbelievable. Exactly what Yirmiyahu said happened 3,000 years ago to Babel. It's amazing. That's why they were afraid of him. That's why they were afraid of him. And therefore, fools that they were, they thought that they could second-guess Yirmiyahu. That was the terrible mistake that they made. All of them made the mistake. Ahasuerus takes out, at the beginning of the Megillah, it says he makes a party in the third year, and he brings out Kalim, Mikalim, Shonim. And Rashi says it, the Gemara says, Shonim, the old Kalim of the Bet HaMikdash. In other words, they were waiting for the moment at which they could prove God and Yirmiyahu wrong. And they were all wrong.
Aren't you great to show some compassion?
Of course I did, because if I wouldn't have shown compassion, you would have interrupted me in the middle of my own Aharon's bubble. I get the last word. Yeah, except at the end of the shiur, you'll get up and make an announcement, you know, for Amuna. Yeah. And if it's anything that conflicts with any shiur over here, yes. Al-Naharot Babel, it seems, was written by David Beruach HaKodesh. It was not written by Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu wrote Sefer Yirmiyahu, and he wrote Echa. He didn't write it. First of all, Yirmiyahu never made it to Naharot Babel. The tragedy of Yirmiyahu's life was that he was taken down to Mitzrayim, and he died in Mitzrayim. And it was against his will. He didn't want to go to Mitzrayim. That was a tragedy. It was a tragic life altogether. Except, of course, when you read Yirmiyahu now, there's such brilliance, such greatness in Yirmiyahu. That was chapter 3. We're starting chapter 4. By the way, it's not chapter 4. I'm sorry. The last few psukim of chapter 3 are really the introduction to chapter 4. I don't know why they divided the chapters this way, but that's the way it is. Pasuk 31 in chapter 3. Nebuchadnezzar Malkah. This is really the text of a letter from Nebuchadnezzar Malkah, from King Nebuchadnezzar the king, Lechol Amemaya, Umaya, Glishamaya, Didorin, Bechol Ara. This is from Nebuchadnezzar the king to all nations, to all peoples, nations, and tongues, Didorin, Bechol Ara, who live all over the world. Ara. By the way, the word Ara, I should also have pointed out, Tzadik and Ayin are interchangeable. It's like Arzo, Eretz. Bechol Ara, all over the world, Shlomchen Yazgi, your peace shall be great. This is the greeting. Achar Drishat Shlomchem Hatov, Shalom Ubracha. Otayo V'timhayo, the signs and the miracles, Di Avad Imi, Eloho Eloi, that the Almighty God did with me, Shvar Kodomai Lahakavaya. What does that sound familiar? Yarivam. Yarivam, where? We have it on the Yarivam sheet. Yeah? In the first chapter of, first paragraph of Yarivam Olam Ba'omaya, Antu Malka, you are the king, king of kings, Ovad Givurtech Vitim Hayo, you have that word over here, Masek Vuratcha Viniflo Techa Tim Hayo, Shvar Kodomach Lahakavaya. It is, Shvar is nice. It's nice. Kodomach, before you, Lahakavaya, to express it. The word Lahakavaya we've had a number of times. So here, by the way, the word Shvar meaning beautiful, you have again in Karibon, in the last line of Karibon, Yerushalayim, Karta de Shufraya, Yerushalayim is the beautiful city. Shifar Kodomach Lahakavaya comes directly from here. Nebuchadnezzar says, Shvar Kodomai, it is beautiful before me, Lahakavaya, to express the great miracles and signs that the God, the Almighty God, did to me. He's going to describe something, an event in his own life. Now take a look at the other words. Otohi Kamo Rav Revin, his signs, how great they are. Rav Revin. Ovdeich v'takifin Rav Revin, how great. Otohi Kamo Rav Revin, his miracles, how great they are. V'timho, v'timhohi, and his signs, Kamo Takifin, how mighty they are. You have that directly in Karibon. Rav Revin Ovadoch V'takifin. Great are your deeds and mighty. Malchutei, back to Daniel. Malchutei, Malchut Alam. His kingdom is a kingdom for eternity. V'sholtonei, and he rules in Dor Vador for all generations. This is the beginning of a letter that is being written by Nebuchadnezzar to all the peoples and all tongues and all nations. Yes. No. I said that this is the introduction to what he's going to say now. He's going to tell a story of his own life. I'm not Nebuchadnezzar. Look at the next passage. I, Nebuchadnezzar, Shalei Haveti V'Beiti, I was tranquil in my house. I was living the great life. V'ra'anan
b'heichali. Nebuchadnezzar was
at rest in my house. No. Ano Nebuchadnezzar. I, Nebuchadnezzar. He's writing this in the letter. Forget it. Out. Forget the last chapter. I said that I don't understand why these introductory psukim to the letter of Nebuchadnezzar to all countries, why that was the end of chapter 3, it's really the beginning of chapter 4. And he writes in the letter, I, Nebuchadnezzar, at peace was I in my house, v'ra'anan b'heichali, in my palace. In my palace I was ra'anan. Ra'anan means fresh. In other words, everything was going very well. And then, chelem chazeit I saw a dream, v'yidachalinani, and it caused me to tremble. And we have the word before, in his first dream in chapter 2, he also describes how he is frightened and scared. Didn't somebody use the, remind us that a scarecrow is a dachlil, is a scarecrow? V'harhorin al mishkavi, and thoughts that I have upon my bed. V'chezvei reishi, and what my head saw. Yevahaluni, caused me to be frightened. Umini simtein. He doesn't say yet what his dream was. But he had this terrible dream that caused him fear unto trembling. Umini simtein. And from me was given a law, an order. Lahan Allah kodamai, to bring before me. Lechol hakimei Babel, all the wise men of Babel. Di pishar chelma Yehoda unani. All these words we've had already. The interpretation of the dream, they should let me know. I want to know what the dream means. Beidayin then. Olin chartumayo oshfayo kazdoi v'gozvayo. Then came, and we should know what they all are. The magicians and the... give me an English translation for all of them, once and for all. The sorcerers, the wizards, the who?
Necromancy.
And which one does they sound? Because the last one is necro. That's very good. Chartumaya, that's very good. Very good. Rashi says that by the Chartumim of Paro. Tamya in Aramaic means bones. And they were able to, using dead bones, they were able to, so to speak, foresee the future. By the way, the Gemara, in most places, when the Gemara mentions the name Nebuchadnezzar, do you know what comes after it? Not Olav HaShalom, not Zichron Olav Racha. It always says, Shechik Tamya. Shechik means to be ground down, and Tamya means bones. That his bones should be ground down. Nebuchadnezzar is referred to as Nebuchadnezzar Shchik Tamya. So therefore, that's very good. The what you've just said, that necromancy, in other words, they tell the future through bones. So Tamya, the word Tamya means bones. All right. Chartumaya, Oshfaya, Kazdoi, Vigazraya, they were all brought. Vichelma, Omar, Anor, Kodomayan, and I said the dream before them. Vichelma, the dream. Omar, Anor, I said Kodomayan before them. Upishra, Lomahod, Inli, and they could not tell me the interpretation. Vaad Ochrin, until at the end, Al Kodomay Daniel, that came before me, Daniel, Dishmei Belshazzar, whose name is Belshazzar. Kishum Elohi, like the name of my God. Baal was the god of Babel. And he gave him a name that incorporated within his the name of his God. V'diruach Elohim Kadishin Bey. And this Daniel has the spirit of the holy God in him. In other words, he lives in two worlds, Nebuchadnezzar. He lives in his world of Baal, and he lives in the world of Daniel's God. V'chelmo kadamohi amrit, and I said my dream before him.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
It says, originally, that he did not remember the dream, and that he asked all his...
This is a different dream.
Oh, it's a different,
different dream.
All right.
He's not telling the story of the first dream.
Okay.
Different dream. And you'll hear this dream. This dream is going to take us into... First we'll tell you the dream. Belshazzar Rav Chartumayo, the Anoyides, and this is what Nebuchadnezzar is saying to him, Belshazzar, the greatest of all the magicians, the Anoyides, I know, the Ruach Olehin Kadishin Bach, that the Spirit of the Holy God is in you, V'chol Roz Lo Onas Oneis Loch, and no secret is withheld from you. Roz, Now we know that the word Roz of the Shabbos, Roz, no secret or nace is withheld from you. Ches veichelmi, the visions of my dream, the chazet that I saw, upishrei emar, tell me the interpretation. The ches veidei al mishkavi, what my head saw on my bed. Chazei haveit I saw, and here begins the dream. Va'alu, and behold, Elon, bego aro. There was a tree in the ground, the rume, and its height, sagi, is great. Now remember, we had the word sagi just a few minutes ago, when he begins his letter to the peoples of all of his empire. He says, Shlomchem, your peace, sagi, shall be great. Over here we're talking about a tree that is in the ground, the rume, and its height is very great. Revo ilona, the tree grew bigger, utekith, and mighty, strong. The word tekith we had over here, takithin, tekith, mighty and big and strong. The rume, yimtel shemaya, rume, its height reaches to the very heavens. Vechazot telesof kal ara, and you can see it to the ends of the very earth. Ofye shapir. Ofye, it really means it's the branches. Shapir, you should know already what the word means. Shefar kodomach lahachabaya. Karto dishufraya. Beautiful branches. The inbay sagi. Now, the fruit. And now we have this word, some dritmol. Inbe sagi, the fruits are big. Umazon lecholabe, and it has food, it has sustenance for all life. Tichosohi tatleil chevat bra, underneath this tree, tatleil. Tatleil comes from the word, just change one thing, the tet to a tzaddik, and you have tzeil. Under it, who are the chevav bera? We had them before also. Chevav bera, the animals, the beasts of the field. Don't we have it in Karibon? Huh? Chevav bera, the ofeg shomaya. Chayat hasadeva, ofot hashomaya. We have it in Karibon. So now under the beasts of the field find shade under it. Uba anpohi, Yiduron tzipore shemaya, and on its branches live the birds of the heaven. Umine yitzin kol bisra, and from that tree all flesh yitzin is sustained. This food. This is an unbelievable tree. Unbelievable tree. Chazei haveit, I saw. Bechazvei reishi al mishkevi. He's saying this now for the third time. I have a feeling, sort of, as he starts moving from one part of the dream to the next, like he's gathering his thoughts again, and while he saw Va'alu, and behold, the word Va'alu again, Ir V'kadish Min Shemaya Nachid. Here we're going to start getting Irin Kadishin Uvinei Enosha Ir V'kadish. Ir V'kadish means a holy one, a holy angel. A holy angel, min shemaya nachit, comes down from heaven. Where do we use the word nachit? When a plane lands, nachita. Ochtaidakot lenachita tamatos, you know, right? Okay. Foch l'manuel. No, okay. Nachita is the. From the very heavens, this angel comes to land. Korei b'chayil v'chein oma. He called out with great strength, and so he said, go do Ilona, chop down the tree, v'katzitzu anpohi, and cut up its branches, ataru ofye, ubadaru inbe. Ataru ofye means to destroy its beauty, or remove the beauty of the foliage, and ubadaru inbe, spread out all of its fruit. Tonud chevesom in tachtoi, let all of the animals move away from under the tree. Vitziporaya min anpohi, and all of the birds from its branches. All over. Cut it down. Chop it up. Everything scattered and spread. Animals flee. Birds fly away. Biram, however, Ikar shorishohi ba'aroshavuku. Ikar, the main part of its root in the earth, shavuku. Leave it in the earth. Shavuku. Shavuku. What am I thinking of? Isn't that a silly question to ask?
Looking for Danielle.
No. Shavikin, Shavisin, Kol Nidre. All of a sudden it occurred to me that Kol Nidre is also
in Aramaic.
Huh? Olachma Anya, right. Yacholu Avasono, the Ara. Ara, we've had the word a number of times. A ksuva. That's right. Many of it. Kaddish. We haven't begun to work on Kaddish yet. But you will have most of the words that make up all of these tefillot you can have here in these few chapters. All right. Let's go. However, Iker Sharishoi Ba'ara Shavuku, leave it. Huh? These Zionists, you know, God, come on. The Gemara says that angels don't understand Aramaic, and therefore there are certain things that we want to say, like my parents, when they didn't want us to understand, they spoke Polish. So when we want to say something that the angels don't understand, we use Aramaic. That's why we say Kaddish in Aramaic. And not only, wait, I'm not finished with you yet. All right, okay. Furthermore, the Gemara says Targum Unculus was given at Sinai. Do you understand? The Torah in Lashon Kodesh and its translation into Aramaic was given at Sinai. So don't underestimate Aramaic.
If the Jews have put in Torah and Book of Esther, yeah, would have written everything in Hebrew, then the Jews in Babel wouldn't have been afraid to go back to Israel because they don't know the language.
And what would Steinsaltz have done if they would have written it in Hebrew? No, come on, you know. By the way, do you know something? Wait a minute, I'm not finished with you. Do you understand? In all of Torah, there are two Aramaic words. What are they, and where are they? And don't say anything, it's her. There are two words in Aramaic in all of Chamisha Chumshei Torah. No, it's in this week's Sedra. At the end of the Sedra, Laban refers to Galed as Yegar Sahadusa. And by the way, it's terribly important that those two Aramaic words appear in Torah, and I'm not going to tell you why.
You taught us that one of the reasons for the Beis Hamikdash was because the Jews did not come from Babel. You taught us that.
No, that was in Yuma, Daf Tes Amud Aleph. And that was Rish Lakish. Yeah. So I went out.
They wouldn't have been so afraid, like the Jews are afraid. I don't
know the language. Now, wait a minute. Last night, some friends of ours from Chutz Laretz, if Mansi is Chutz Laretz, some friends of ours from Chutz Laretz took us out to dinner. You didn't notice this. I'm talking to my wife now. There was a certain conversation that took place over there you didn't notice, because for the last 50 years I've been getting into a fight about Eretz Yisrael with this fellow from Mansi. We were really ready not to go out with him, and then we decided we're going to go out because from this guy from Chutz Laretz, we're going to starve for a week so that we can eat him out of pocket and credit card. And we went out with them, and we decided in advance that, you know, we're going to stay calm, we're not going to get into any fights, not going to talk about politics, no politics, no matter it's no, we'll talk about Clinton, we'll talk about anything, but just not politics. And we did. Now, somehow or other, I had ordered something, and he made mention of a Gemara. There's a Gemara that says, "Kamotipshoi hani bavloi, how foolish are those Babylonians? The ochli nahama benahama, who eat bread with bread." It's like eating bread with pasta. Like, so the Gemara says the Babylonians are foolish. And I don't know, it had something to do with, I think I had two carbohydrates. That's it. There's two side dishes to the steak. I haven't had a steak. Only that he should pay for it. So I think I ordered rice and potato and french fries. So he looks at me and he says, "Kamatipshoi, hani bavloi, how stupid are those Babylonians who eat nahama benahama?" So you didn't notice this. So he said, I told him, if you're mentioning a Gemara about Babylonians, I'll tell you a better Gemara. So he whispered to me, "I know that one. You told it to me already." Which Gemara was he referring to? I thought that's the Gemara. It's the Gemara in Yuma where Resh Lakish said, 700 years after Churban HaBayit, Resh Lakish, who lived in Eretz Yisrael, says, "Eloho, I swear to God, Sanina lechu bavloi, I hate you Babylonians, the lo alitem bimei Ezra. You didn't come on Aliyah in the days of Ezra. Because if you would have come on Aliyah in the days of Ezra, God would have done miracles as he did in the days of Yahushua." All that I said was Babylonians, and most probably that Gemara that I told him a few years ago, the last time we had a big fight, he most probably remembered that Gemara, and he said, I know that. You didn't even notice it, right? There could have been an explosion right there, and I would have had to pay for the steak. But he was the one.
He was just as anxious as you to avoid an explosion.
Right, you know why? Because his wife told us, "I warned him. I warned him before we came. No fighting around tonight. No fighting around tonight."
Who is this guy?
Bella, you know what we should do before he leaves? Let's give him a copy of this tape.
I'm here.
Huh?
Tell him to come.
Oh, yeah, you.
I know that he might be next week.
No. You know what I did? Well, I'll tell you what I did, though. Exactly what I said yesterday, that anybody, if you want to aggravate your friends from Chutz Arts, just give them a set of my four tapes on Eretz Yisrael in Halach and Ashkaf. I came into the restaurant with a set of tapes for him. Guaranteed to get his blood boiling. All right. But I made the condition, my wife said, she said he'll never listen to it. And the condition was he must listen to it. So it seems he rides a bicycle 4 miles every day, and he listens, you know, to all sorts of tapes. So he may even listen. Maybe listen to mine. Let me just finish a pasuk or two. Here the Malach comes down, and the Malach orders the destruction of this great tree. And everything, all of its fruit and all of its branches, the birds fly away, the beasts leave. However, its main root in the earth, Shivukul, leave it there. U'be'esur di parzel u'nechosh, Bidit or di bora, ubeesur. Now, if you review, then there are words that are being repeated here. Parzel unechosh, barzel. By the way, Arabs also can't say a bay. Say a pay instead of a bay. Bays instead of they. And you know, the pay and the bays are it.
That's why they call it banyas.
They call it the banyas.
Right.
Okay. So parzel is barzel, nechosh, yeah? It should be tied up. The root of the tree is going to be tied into the ground with parzel and nechosh. Bidis or the berah. Divara. Ditar is the grass. Divara of the outside of the earth. Ubetal shemaya yitztava, and it will be washed by the dew that comes down from heaven. V'imcheveso chalake ba'asav ara, and this tree, cheveso are the animals. V'imcheveso chalake, it will share Basav Ade, the tree is going to share the grass of the earth with the animals. Libidemin and Ashay Shanun, his heart will be changed or removed from men. Ulevav Cheva Yit Yehevle, and the heart of an animal will be given to him. Veshiva Idonin Yachufun Aloi, and 7 periods of time will pass before him. This is nearly the end of the. You'll have to wait till next week to find out what the dream means. What the dream means. It's very fascinating. Okay.